6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, Friday, and we're in Central Time, August 12, 2022. Of course, you may not be. You may just time your day so that you can not miss any of this show, which we appreciate, especially with times the way they are. President Trump, the former president, obviously is referring to what is going on in today's society as dark times. And so, you know, people obviously, especially if they voted for President Trump in 2020 and feel a little deceived, are a little upset right now. And of course, anything said in the media and in our counterculture have a tendency to make us a little upset with the way things are. And, you know, yesterday we heard about the guy that showed up at the Cincinnati, Ohio FBI office with a nail gun and a AR-15 style rifle, proceeded to rip nail gun rounds, which I don't know what good that did, but they basically chased him all the way back to his house. I guess he's no longer. There is a gentleman who's with us that currently lives in Cincinnati right now. His name is Dr. Bruce E. Levine. He was born in 56, grew up in Rockaway, New York City, graduated from Queens College of the City University of New York, got his Ph.D. in clinical psychology from the University of Cincinnati, which I guess is probably one of the reasons why he still lives there, because Cincinnati kind of grows on you, doesn't it, Bruce?
It does. It does. But you're right. That is the reason why I came out here, and I just stuck around.
So the thing is, now that we're dealing with clinical psychology, I guess the obvious question most people are thinking, and folks, if I'm not in the same mindset as you, the telephone number is 844-769-2944. You can call in and ask Dr. Levine a question, and you don't have to lay out on the couch while you're talking, all right? So even though he's got a doctorate in clinical psychology, you don't have to lay on the couch to talk to him. You can just sit in the chair and ask whatever questions you want to ask. We'll let you do that. Last time I checked, freedom of speech was still legal in America. So, but the big thing is PSYOPs, and all of my listeners know this term, Dr. Levine. They all know about PSYOPs, psychological operations, and you write and speak on how society, culture, politics, and psychology intersect. You've got a new book out, A Profession Without Reason, The Crisis of Contemporary Psychiatry, Untangled and Solved by Spinoza, Freethinking and Radical Enlightenment. And I got to ask, you know, first off, where's it available? And give me the 40,000-foot view.
Well, it's available. You can get it anywhere from my publisher at AK Press, or if people want to give Amazon their money, they can get it there. They go to my website, brucelevine.net, and it talks about where you can go get the book. I mean, the book is generally about the subtitle. You know, it's a profession without reason, and the subtitle is about this crisis in contemporary psychiatry and trying to untangle it and solve it with Spinoza and free thinking and radical enlightenment. And just starting from the get-go, what I mean by this crisis in contemporary psychiatry is that really even within establishment psychiatry, they're finally acknowledging the lack of science behind psychiatry. So three big areas that even people like the former director of the National Institute of Mental Health, you can't be more of an establishment psychiatry figure than that guy, a guy named Thomas Insull. And he talked about it, you know, 10 years ago, he was talking about the failure in terms of outcome. So he used terms like bleak and abysmal. And once he said it, and he talked about how with increased numbers of people in treatment, we got from his statistics, 1 out of 6 Americans right now on some sort of psychiatric drug. You have between late 1980s and 2008, a 400% increase in antidepressant drugs. So despite this huge increase in treatment, we have increasing suicide. We have increasing anxiety, depression, substance abuse. You pick it, disability, mental illness, disability. So that's one area that even establishment psychiatry is now acknowledging. They're failing in outcome. This is a pretty big deal. The second area that they're finally acknowledging is that, and this area used to be just more sort of critically thinking, even radical mental health professionals would talk about, but now even establishment psychiatrists, guys like Insull, are talking about this failure of psychiatry's whole diagnostic manual, their DSM, which is published by the American Psychiatric Association, which is the guild of America's psychiatrists. That's their big money maker, this DSM, and the National Institute of Mental Health, the director in 2011, 2013, he's making comments saying like, well, we think this thing is invalid scientifically. It doesn't have any value scientifically, and that we're not even going to use these DSM categories that are very famous in America to use for research. So this is a big blow to the American Psychiatric Association.
No kidding. I mean, DSM, that's been the big thing, and now we got gender dysphoria, and they're saying it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I mean, to just stick with, you know, we'll get to the third area in a second, chemical imbalance, how that's been finally jettisoned by establishment psychiatry. But if you want to stick with the DSM for a while, I mean, again, people who are just had common sense and logic and reason, they knew in the 1970s this had nothing to do with science. And one of the big things that psychiatry has gone through many, many crises of credibility and authority in the last 100 years. And one big one in the 1970s was an era where everybody was laughing at psychiatry. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was winning the Oscars. And the big kind of political issue in that era was that psychiatry was still calling homosexuality a mental illness. And gay activists were not very happy about that because they didn't see that as an upgrade in terms of their life. You know, psychiatry was thinking that it was an upgrade to call somebody mentally ill versus calling them a criminal or a sinner. And gay activists said, no, this is no upgrade at all. And so they fought. They fought hard against the American Psychiatric Association. And the American Psychiatric Association abolished homosexuality as a mental illness in 1973. And for a lot of people, forgetting about this great victory for gay activists, for a lot of people who just were looking at this and were scientists, they're going, wait a minute, this doesn't sound like anything in this DSM has anything to do with science. It has to do with culture and it has to do with politics. You couldn't, a bunch of people could not go ahead and protest and get rid of cancer or get rid of diabetes. It seems like a very different phenomenon, what you're classifying. And so lo and behold, the American Psychiatric Association became more partnered up with drug companies. And in the 1980s, they started to go after kids and started to pathologize, medicalize kids. So that's when you had the big, all of a sudden, every kid who wasn't paying attention to school. There's always been the majority of kids hate school. Lots of them are really smart kids. And, you know, 100 years ago, you know, families weren't so unhappy with that. They would stay working on the family farm. They wouldn't go off to college. But all of a sudden, 1980s and even more so nowadays, you know, families, they get upset when their kids are not going to college. And so psychiatry realized that this was terrifying parents, that their kids weren't not liking school, not paying attention to these boring teachers. So that's when they came up with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD.
Yeah.
And they also came up with something else that I always talk about, well, almost always talk about, something less known but becoming increasingly popular, something called oppositional defiant disorder, which the symptoms are, I know it's laughable for a guy like you, Dave, but the symptoms of this thing are often argues with adults, often refuses to comply with adult requests and rules, often irritating with adults, often irritated by and irritating to adults. It goes on and on. And so basically what you're doing is pathologizing attentional noncompliance, behavioral noncompliance, and anybody who's read any history knows that some of the greatest artists, some of the greatest activists, some of the greatest even entrepreneurs have all been rebellious, have all been noncompliant. But, you know, that was what happened. America became much more swung to a more authoritarian society in the 1980s, and it still continued. And so people are going along with this idea that it's okay to pathologize people just because they're noncompliant.
That's a sad state of affairs, because your previous book was Resisting Illegitimate Authority, A Thinking Person's Guide to Being an Anti-Authoritarian, Strategies, Tools, and Models, which came out in 2018. And now everybody, this is probably the book they're really going to want to go after. Chance, you're on the phone with Dr. Bruce Levine. Go ahead.
Yes, hello, Dave. Hello to the guest. You know, isn't it ironic how all these so-called mental illnesses they come up with now are straight out of George Orwell's 1984 book, more or less. So in other words, I'm sure your guest, which I didn't catch his name, I'm so sorry.
Dr. Bruce Levine. Yes, he's with us here.
Yes, Dr. Levine. Isn't it ironic, it's so obvious that it's all about thought control, more than it is helping a person with a so-called mental illness, correct?
Well, I think there's a lot of pieces on the political chessboard. And, you know, some of the pieces just are straight out having to do with pharmaceutical companies making a lot of money off of any time you can pathologize and medicalize a kind of normal human behavior. Somebody's going to make a lot of money pushing drugs on that. And it gives a lot of power to the American Psychiatric Association. But the other kind of power that really all of these things do is that the more that you convince a society, and I guess if you want to call this thought control, but the more that you convince a society that their problems with school or their problems being depressed or sad or anxious have to do with an individual defect on their part, whether it's a genetic, biochemical, whatever, the more you can convince them of that, the more that they're less likely to go ahead and say, wait a minute, maybe we're miserable and unhappy, angry, alienated, depressed, because we're living in a society that's dehumanizing, that's alienating, that, you know, you've got 900,000 jobs at Amazon, you know, where you're moving boxes around here, you know, in some giant warehouse, and you can't talk to anybody. You think a normal human being's not going to get alienated, depressed, and anxious there? But the powers to be, the Jeff Bezoses and the other folks who are running the show out there, they don't want you to think that maybe your anxiety and depression and your substance abuse has anything to do with the society that they're living in. They want you to believe that it's some sort of individual defect on your part, a biochemical genetic defect.
Right. And Dave, if I may add, you know, it broke my heart. I shed a tear when I heard about Lane Cavanaugh's passing. I think I called into that show a while back when you had him as a guest. It really broke my heart to hear that news, Dave.
Yeah, I was in shock all day yesterday about it. And I just, you know, like I said, I can only assimilate here and not even allege, but, you know, it's a supposition. The guy was under a lot of pressure, but getting drunk and going and waving an AR-15 around in front of cops is not the answer. And so, you know, this is one of the things that just totally, I mean, I was just like, dude, seriously, what were you thinking? And I bet his girlfriend she's got to live with this the rest of her life, calling the cops. She could have probably calmed him down and said, look, let's not go there. Let's not do this. I know you're under a lot of pressure. This litigation's killing you. It killed a lot of people during the foreclosure mess. And so, I mean, and Dr. Levine, believe it or not, all of this conversation we're having right now, the phones are lighting up. Chance, God bless you, sir. Thank you for caring. And we thank you for calling the program. I hope Dr. Levine answered your question.
Yes, God bless both of you gentlemen. Now, have a good day.
Thank you, Chance. Sherry in Kansas, you're on the phone with Dr. Bruce Levine. Go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Levine, I've heard that the way some of these things that sound pretty outrageous get in the DSM is that they're voted on at these meetings. They don't really prove it. There's a way, you know, they can't prove it scientifically to diagnose it. They just vote on them. Is that true?
That's absolutely true. I mean, the American Psychiatric Association, the APA, publishes the DSM, and they have a select committee. We're up to, by the way, DSM-5. First one came out in 1952, and this last DSM-5 came out in 2013. So every 15, 20 years, they try to revise it because people are laughing at it, but they're never able to fix basic scientific issues of validity and reliability. But what you're saying, Sherry, is absolutely true, that they selected a task force, a committee of big shot elite psychiatrists, and they sit around and they vote. They vote not only whether something is an illness or not an illness, but they vote on what are the symptoms on it. And that's why you can do things like, you know, very rarely does anything ever get abolished, by the way. And that's a rare thing for gay activists to be successful in abolishing homosexuality is a mental illness. Most of the time, things are added. Illnesses are added, or the names are changed. So used to be when I was a young guy, we had manic depression. Now we have bipolar 1, bipolar 2, cyclothymic. And so, you know, they add these things, and it's purely voted on. So the really interesting question for me, and this is a lot of what I talk about in A Professional Without Reason, is what's their criteria? What's their genuine criteria? Since there's really no science involved, what's the sort of political criteria for how something becomes a mental illness? And it's obvious when you see things, when you see how it works. It has to do with their decision about whether a certain phenomenon out there gets them uptight, creates tension for them. So, you know, back in the 1940s, 1950s, most of America, they assumed, was got uptight when they were hanging around somebody who was homosexual. Well, by the time, you know, the late 60s, early 70s were coming around, you know, a lot of people who had friends who were homosexual, but psychiatry wasn't aware of this. And so, you know, they were behind the curve on that. But what they realized, too, psychiatry, was that, wow, there's still even more people who are getting uptight around kids who are not compliant. These, what we were talking about, these ADHD kids and the oppositional defiant disorder kids. So if you take a look at the real criteria for what makes something a mental illness, it has to do with psychiatrist's decision. Does this thing get me uptight? Do I think it gets other people uptight? And that's insane when you're talking about scientifically creating whether something is an illness or not, especially if you understand that the vast majority of mental health professionals, especially big shot elite psychiatrists who are on these task force committees, are people who are mostly very compliant people. And it doesn't take a lot. They're conformist compliant people. So what gets them uptight would probably get a lot less of your audience, more than your audience would be much more tolerant of a lot more eccentric or non sort of behavior that doesn't exactly fit in the norms. Whereas these kinds of folks, for them, it doesn't take much for them to get them uptight. But I think, and back to your question again, absolutely, it's voted on, and the criteria that's used to vote on, they'll never talk about. They'll never say. They'll admit. They'll acknowledge that it's voted, but they won't acknowledge what I just said on what their criteria is, how things get voted in, and what the criteria are.
And so, Sherry, okay. And I got it.
One more question, and I'll get off. Could you comment on them not letting children have recess? I'll take my answer off the air.
Okay, thanks, Sherry. We appreciate that. Not letting kids have recess. What do you think about that, Dr.?
Well, overall, that you're talking about schools becoming more and more kind of totalitarian places here, that they're made more and more places where, you know, kids can't, you know, do anything in there that's actually fun for them. So they get rid of a gym, they get rid of recess, they get rid of music and art. And so you're creating a place that's more and more kind of a kid-unfriendly, dissatisfying kind of place. So, of course, you're going to have kids, more kind of kids, who are just feeling like alienated, who are feeling bored, who are feeling powerless. And, of course, that's going to the powers to be. Again, you know, American Psychiatric Association, drug companies, politically that works well for them. You got more people, more kids being diagnosed, more unhappy kids, more kids diagnosed, and more drug companies making more money. So, unfortunately, I know that sounds cynical or maybe even paranoid to some of your people in your audience, but that's just the way American society works. Power, money, politics rules the day on pretty much every spoke of the wheel.
Well, the thing is, Dr. Bruce, and I got to chime in here. You know, we just had Uvalde, and the kid apparently was on some sort of antidepressants. Yeah, I got to ask these questions because all of this stuff is relevant to people because they see all these mass shootings. And then what happens is that the liberal media goes hysterical and starts chiming in like the rest of Democratic-led Congress about we need gun control. And they're punishing the very people that the reason we haven't totally imploded is because everybody here has guns and they respect them. But then you have some, you know, kid that is on drugs or got bullied in one of these authoritarian type establishments that you're talking about, namely a school, and he decides to go shoot up a school. I mean, you know what? I don't hear the DSM out there talking about, you know, kids like this at target schools.
Well, what you're talking about here is what I would call that. I actually just wrote a recent article about that, the twilight zone of psychiatry and politics, where, you know, you've got all kinds of people exploiting all kinds of facts and not wanting to deal with the truth and reality. And I hate to say this. I mean, when I talk to most audience, whether I'm talking to mostly people on the blue team and I'm talking to people on the red team, the vast majority of people, I don't want them buying my book. I do not want them buying my book because they're not critical thinkers. And I only want critical thinkers buying my book. This is Spinoza himself. You know, this is what he talked about. And because most people out there, they're not really wanting to look at the data, look at, you know, reason, look at logic and get to truths. They're mostly trying to just, you know, find things that validate, you know, their ideas, that give them sort of team affiliation, whether it's blue team affiliation, red team affiliation, or they're trying to move up in the hierarchy of the blue team or the red team here. And so on this whole issue of kids shooting up, shopping centers and schools, it's a complex issue. And that, you know, part of the problem is that, you know, people on the red team don't want to deal with, a lot of folks don't want to deal with. You're living in a pretty alienating, insane society with a lot of angry kids out there. And if you're going to give them easy access to AR-15s, you're going to create a lot of havoc. And if you don't want to deal with that on the red team, I don't know what to tell you. And then on the blue team, I would tell them, if you really think that more mental health treatment is going to be the answer, when we know that a lot of these school shooters have had, you know, mental health treatment. In fact, a lot of them have taken these antidepressants, you know, and have been, you know, taking those things while they're shooting up things. If you think that's the simple answer here, you know, you're missing reality here. So I think part of what I'm trying to do in a, you know, professional without a reason is to talk to a select group of people who are willing to use their brain, who are willing to think. And these are people, I have to tell you, a big part of the book is about that. If you're controlled by fear, you know, either, you know, whatever the fear is, you're not going to be a real free thinker. You're not going to be a critical thinker here. And you're not going to get to really the truths of what's going on, of why we have this massive, insane shooting sprees going on by mostly young men in our society.
No doubt. And this is the thing. You know, we have a very smart audience here, Dr. Levine. It's, you are a good match because the phones are lighting up like crazy. Patrice in Ohio, you're on the phone with Dr. Bruce Levine. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, everything we're describing is the battle between good and evil. You just brought up fear. That's Satan's toolbox. All this stuff, and the psychiatry does not want to even delve in the supernatural or the unexplainable because it just has to be science behind it. These people are demented. They spiritually, morally are misguided, and there's no amount of drugs or psychology is going to change that in society. Just isn't going to happen. That's why we're at where we're at.
Okay, Dr. Levine, what's your response to that?
I don't know what you know, the question is, you know, what she's looking for.
It isn't
there.
A question, it's a statement.
Okay. Okay, okay, okay.
Well, we're at the break, believe it or not. We're going to have to wait on that that comment for Patrice. We appreciate your call. Esther, Nancy in Michigan, Esther in Washington, please stay on the phone. We're going to take your calls after the break. And anybody else wants to call in, get in the queue right now because the calls are stacking up. 844-769-2944 for Dr. Bruce Levine. We will be back after this short break. Stay with us.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita silver lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Yes, friends, and you are, my friends. Welcome to the Power Hour. Dave Krieger with you. We're live. Friday, August 12, 2022, Central Time on the Power Hour. Don't forget, we have the end of summer sale, and we don't sell antidepressants on our Power Mall. All right, so those of you, now you have an opportunity to save up to 20% when you spend more than $200 on the Power Mall. It's what keeps us going here. We have Dr. Bruce Levine on the phone, and the calls, I mean literally, are stacking up. Esther in Washington, go ahead. Dr. Bruce Levine's on the phone here.
Hello,
I can hear the chair
Dr.
squeak.
Bruce. Yes, hello, Dr. Levine.
Hi there.
Thanks for being on the Power Hour. That's great. You know, one thing I like to say about psychologists and psychiatrists, they got to say less and listen more. Have you heard? Have you heard that little nursery rhyme about the owl? I'll tell it to you. There was an owl in an oak. The more he heard, the less he spoke. The less he spoke, the more he heard. Why can't we all be like that wise old bird? So I'm going to... So you talked about fear, and that is... okay, that is the bottom line, the answer to what is happening in the world today. Fear has gripped everybody by their souls. And I would like to read to you a quote from Jack London. Do you know who Jack London is?
Absolutely.
Okay. He is our most venerated writer of all time. And this is what he said about fear. Fear means that the power has turned inward, facing you. Should this happen, you must find a way to reverse it immediately. Otherwise, it will consume you. So to everybody out there, you are not alone. God is with you, but you have to be with God. And you have to be with God with courage, because it is dangerous to be good now. So thank you for the Power Hour, for letting us talk what's in our souls, and thank you, Mr. Levine, for listening.
Appreciate sure. you, Esther. God bless you. We appreciate you. And the thing is, you're coming from what typically we refer to as the blue team in a blue state, but she's not. She's one of our listeners, a regular callers, Dr. Bruce. And so, you know, I get exactly what she's saying and your thought process on it.
My thought process on fear. Well, I mean, I think that that's a huge part of what I was writing a Professional Without Reason about, because this is what Spinoza in the 1670s was worried about, that the authorities, the powers to be then, were using fear of the unknown. So they would use like ideas about heaven and hell to really scare a lot of folks. And they would, you know, the clergy, the monarchy would be a source of control. And so the parallel today is what's replaced a lot of that kind of authoritarian clergy is psychiatry has used a lot of fear to terrorize parents about kids who aren't paying attention in school. Even a lot of people out there, there's a lot of young people out there who might be hearing voices even out there. And what we know from the research is if they have an okay, friendly, positive, you know, relationship with these voices, that they're not really telling them to do god-awful things, or it's not necessarily means they're going to be crazy and psychotic or schizophrenic. And we know that from the research. But, you know, psychiatrists, again, you know, like the kid innocently, naively tells some authority that they might be hearing a voice, that, you know, they're going to get inflamed by fear. And I think for what I would tell your audience, that if they're going to see any kind of a counselor, helper, whether it's a psychiatrist, psychologist, or pastoral counselor, whoever, and they're inflaming their fear versus de-escalating their fear, they're not doing you any good. Because anybody who's doing their job right, who's a real good helper, a real counselor, is trying their best to reduce your fear here. So again, so you could think more clearly, rationally, critically, and you could have compassion for yourself and other people.
Well, I appreciate that. Nancy in Michigan, you're up next. Thanks for holding through the break. Go ahead.
Yes, my question is for the doctor is how does he suggest fighting somebody willy-nilly submitting paperwork, lying on the paperwork, and you get hauled off to a psych ward classified as schizophrenic and psychotic, and you're not anything more than maybe OCD and a little passive-aggressive. Do you have any suggestions on how to battle this and the willful misconduct of the doctor? I told him, you know, I don't need Invega because of underlying conditions that are exacerbated. So do you have any suggestions?
Well, I hear that kind of what you're talking about a lot, okay? Because a lot of there's a large group of people out there. The good news, I got some good news for a lot of people in your audience who are not aware, not only that there are a handful of dissident mental health professionals, but there's a much larger group of former psychiatric patient activists out there. Some of them call themselves psychiatric survivors. Some of these folks just call themselves people who've had an experience, a lived experience with an altered state. And they're helping one another, helping each other. Now, there's, you know, probably more significant numbers of these people in places like Massachusetts and Oregon and some of the park, Vancouver, Canada. But I would tell folks out there in your audience, you might want to check out the webzine, the kind of go-to place for dissident mental health professionals and folks who are ex-psychiatric patients or current psychiatric patients looking for some support and validation, something called MaddenAmerica.com. And it was created by a journalist, okay, a courageous journalist, a guy named Robert Whitaker, who actually, wrote about the abuses of psychiatric research, almost won a Pulitzer Prize for this in the late 1990s, but became sort of a marginalized dissident journalist himself. Whether you're a journalist or a mental health professional and you speak out about this stuff, that you face a sort of a marginalization price. But again, to repeat that, that's MaddenAmerica.com, that a lot of folks out there who are struggling and looking for some information, some validation, what to do, that's the place where I would take a look.
Thank you.
We appreciate your call, Nancy. Thank you. We got a solution there. MaddenAmerica.com. That is a solution. We love it. We're all about solutions here. Darlene in Indiana, did Patrice get your goat? I mean,
yes,
is that?
Yes, she did, because it's more than damn Satan and all this other stuff. It's nutrition, nutrition, nutrition. We're fat heads. We need fat. The children need fat, not 1% milk given out by Head Start and all this other stuff, you know. But Dr. Levine sounds as interesting as Dr. Peter Bregan, so I think I'm going to have to get his book, you know.
There you go, profession without reason.
Everybody's brainwashed. You know, you got Psych 1 in college. Thank God I didn't go to college. But I know people that have, and they all get Psych 1. The cops are brainwashed. Everybody, it just needs to be taken down. And then these poor guys that come back from these military affairs, that, you know, what they've seen, and I've talked to them, and I don't mince words with them, and then they get a debriefer that's 25 years old, generally a woman, that doesn't have a clue what this guy faced other than textbook cases. You know?
Yeah.
And that's why we have problems. And they're not eating right. The glyphosate attacks the stomach, and the gut tells me if you got gut problems, you got brain problems.
A little brain fog there. Yep. I get it.
Yeah,
you know, I'm sorry, Darlene.
That.
I know, Darlene, I took Psych 1 in college, and you know what my term paper was on? Psychological factors of cult motivation.
Oh, that's good.
Which I got an A in that, of course. I aced psych. But you know what? I get what you're saying. Now, as far as the psychiatric point of what you're trying to make.
The psychiatric point is they've got too much damn power. I just had an 87-year-old aunt put into mental health because when her son said, well, maybe we need to put you in a nursing home, she said, I would rather die. Those words put her in a psych unit for 4 days.
Oh, no. All right,
yes.
Dr. Levine,
I know, this is wrong. You know, my first question is psychology, and I tell people if you go to see these people, the first question you ask, how many suicides do you have to your name? Because I've seen them swinging on ropes around here.
Oh, my God. All right, Dr. Levine.
It's a serious thought, you know.
Well, Lots of interesting points you're making there. Let me just pick one. The whole idea of like what psychiatry, again, their point when we talked earlier in the show about the political chessboard here and why, you know, even though there's really have no scientific legitimacy, why psychiatry exists. And one of them is really they function in our society to deal with people who are, I know this is an ugly word, but it's the truth, inconvenient. So whether it's a kid who's not paying attention in a school and inconvenient for a teacher who's got 25, 30 kids, or some person who's walking around a rich neighborhood in a business district talking in ways that are not illegal, but are make people uncomfortable, they're inconvenient. And so a lot of what psychiatry exists for is to deal with people who are not doing anything illegal that you can't formally arrest them with the police, but they're creating tension. They're inconvenient folks. And so that's what psychiatry, that's their role. That's their constant role here in since they've existed is to be this kind of coercive institution to deal with folks who are not doing anything illegal that create tension. And you're describing with the case with your elderly aunt, that's the thing. She, you know, they didn't know what the heck to do with her. She didn't want to go in a nursing home. You know, people thought she needed to be there. She created tension. And then she made the mistake of being totally honest, talking about I'd rather die, and that zoomed. And that's one of the things I talk about in the book. The difference between Spinoza and his friends is he was a lot more careful. He had a lot more cautious, and his friends were a lot bolder in terms of their rebellions against authority, and they got thrown in prison and died in prison. And so part of the thing that people have to really come to grips with is that to understand if you're going to be somebody out there who is going to be a free thinker out there who's not wanting to buy into all of this non-scientific, you know, stuff, that you're going to create some tension, and you better be careful with what you say, with who you say here, or authorities are going to do things to you.
Yeah, that's happened multiple times there. Darlene, was your grant your
one
aunt,
more point?
Was
it,
she,
it
no,
seems,
was she sharp as attack? Was she as sharp as attack?
There's one more point. That most of the people that seem to have psychology go there because they don't really have friends to talk to. I mean, they might have Facebook friends, which I don't even include, but they just, friends don't know how to talk to friends anymore, except us older people, I guess. And then they keep tweaking, it's not your fault, it's everyone else's. So you got a return customer base, you know what I mean? It seems like that.
Well, no, that's an interesting analysis by Darlene. I think there's a lot of validity to what she's saying, that a lot of the whole mental health profession out there exists, and a lot of actually entire consumer society exists, is because people are isolated and disconnected, and there's enormous, and the statistics out there grow all the time in terms of if you look at polls on people who have, they don't have one person in their entire life who they would consider an intimate person that they could talk to things that are really important to them. And so those numbers on those things, last I looked, and I'm sure it's higher than this, is about a third of America. They don't have one person in their life. And there's a lot of reasons for this, of why this is happening. But if people in mental health, like psychiatrists, psychologists, really cared about people's emotional well-being, they would speak out much more loudly, as the problem isn't to do with biochemical brain imbalances or genetics. A big part of the problem is exactly what Darlene's talking about, is people are really socially isolated, disconnected, have no friends, have no intimates.
Well, the thing is, too, though, what Darlene said, and my question again was your aunt as sharp as a tack? Because if she was, and somebody said, we're going to put you in a nursing home, and she said, I'd rather die than go in a nursing home, maybe it's because that she's heard all the horror stories about stuff that goes on in nursing homes. She didn't want to be there. And she'd rather be dead than put up with that, and then people took it the wrong way. I mean, that's entirely possible as well, is it not?
It was in New York State, and my aunt is sharp as a tack.
Well, there you go. That explains it.
You know,
Darlene.
And she volunteered many times in her years for hospice and nursing homes. So she has a pretty good idea, you know. But
see, that's what my point was. Yeah. That's what my point was. That's what I was trying to get at, Darlene. You just nailed it. All right. Now, that set up my firm belief right there. First off, you said it was in New York. That just answered a big question right there. Secondly, she's as sharp as a tack. And because of the fact she was, I get why she said that, because my own mother did not want to go in a nursing home either. She was in assisted living multiple times, but she ended up passing away in hospice in my house. So I get what you're saying completely. So, I mean, this is, you know, somebody takes it the wrong way and this is what happens. So that is that a common thing, Dr. Levine?
Absolutely, it's common that people and you know, what you have out there in society, and it's really sad, is when you have strangers who know nothing about a person, their culture, their background, who they are. They can't even make a real, a healthy kind of judgment of like what kind of shape somebody's in. So they're basing, you know, what kind of shape somebody's in on their own ideas. So they hear, as soon as somebody says, like, I'd rather die, they go like, oh, my God, this person's mentally ill and they need to be put in a psychiatric institution. Whereas a lot of folks out there have been to that point in their life where things feel pretty bleak and they're just making an expression of like they're saying something, except you want to be careful about using exactly those words, I'd rather die, when you're hanging around psychiatrists, because they're not like regular people that you can use that expression and get across something in the way that we're talking about it right now.
Well, let's break it down to a smaller level here, though, Dr. Levine. You go to the doctor's office for a regular medical appointment, your wellness checkup, and the first thing out of her mouth is, and this has happened to my wife, it's happened to me, they ask you, well, have you been depressed lately? Have you been feeling suicidal? Have you had any negative thoughts? And it's like, all right, where are we going with this?
Well, you know, here's the thing on that. It's so sad, our society, that I know a lot of these GPs and the guys who are embarrassed by having to do that thing, they're retiring as soon as they can. And the younger ones who are these primary care docs who are asking those questions, a lot of those folks are embarrassed to be asked them. They're being forced to ask them by the health insurance company that they're being forced to ask them by Medicare and Medicaid, and they're not even able to sort of practice medicine in a way that they really feel good about. They can't even just say, so some of the ones, the old timers, would even say, look, I got to ask you these questions when I ask you to say no, because if you say yes when you're depressed, I'm going to have to put you on these prescriptions. This is the insanity that would go on. And that's why a lot of old-time primary care docs, you know, they would just quit because it was just ridiculous. But the point of, like, the whole idea of thinking, you know, not really having a relationship with somebody and asking these kind of heavy questions, and not really understanding the context of when somebody says, yeah, I'm a little depressed, what that means for one person, what that means for another, is just part of the overall insanity of society.
I mean, that's amazing, because I'm not saying anything that anybody else out there that has gone to their doctor for a wellness visit hasn't been confronted with. I know that this is going on. And the thing is, I think you're pretty right on, Dr. Levine, about the fact that they're being pressured into saying it. But I think a lot of it is influenced by Big Pharma itself, because they want to sell more drugs. I mean, look at how much advertising is going on TV right now and how it's affecting our society. And people are self-diagnosing and going to the doctor and go, well, I saw this on TV and I think I need this drug.
Well, that's definitely absolutely true. And that folks would, maybe not your audience, but a lot of folks out there are sort of shocked to hear that when, you know, these MDs out there, they think they're getting a scientific education. But if you kind of follow the money trail, whether it's their psychiatry department that they're going to school with or their continuing education credit or whatever, it's being funded indirectly or directly by drug companies. So, you know, one of the things that people have to understand, I mean, people, I'm sure most of your audience get that, you know, drug companies and corporations in general, there are a lot of things, but they're not stupid. And if anywhere they could spend a few million to make a few billion, they're going to do it. And so anywhere, whether it's direct consumer advertising, which, by the way, wasn't even illegal in America until the mid-1990s, when drug companies were able to sort of control the government to allow that to happen, or whether they're going to control doctors directly. 75% of psychiatrists take some degree of payment one way or the other from drug companies. We know this through the kind of open data, open payment source. So one way or the other, these guys are looking for any way possible to manipulate the consumer, the patient, or these doctors to feel good about giving out these drugs. And that's just business as usual in America.
That's pretty scary stuff. Darlene, any other questions? I guess we've lost Darlene in Indiana. She's a farmer, by the way, and so that's why, you know, you have the gut-brain thing going on, which I entirely agree with, because everybody's talking about gastrointestinal problems these days, and that is a serious situation. A lot of it, I think, is caused by stress. What do you think, Dr. Levine?
Sure. I mean, and, you know, one of the only things that's positive these days about the mental health profession is after years and years and years of burying the idea of like how important trauma and stress was to everything, whether it was, you know, heart problems, cancer or depression or, you know, or having, you know, psychotic breaks. After burying this idea, now people are talking about it. So now you hear a lot about trauma and trauma informed and stress and how it's not a great thing for human beings to be walking around, you know, with their body, you know, being flooded by adrenaline and cortisol all the time. So it's taken a lot of years for the obvious common sense stuff to get uncovered again here. And this is sort of, again, the history of psychiatry here is a lot of common sense stuff, you know, that people are talking about in one era gets buried for decades and decades. And lo and behold, people rediscover it and then it gets buried again. And that's just the cycle of what happens in the mental health profession.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge thing. I mean, DSM, that just is the tip of the iceberg. And I know that, you know, a lot of people out of curiosity went to the library. I've gone through this DSM almost cover to cover when I was in med school for a while. And, you know, you look at this stuff and it's like, where are you coming up with these diagnoses and what, you know, people, first off, they rationalize away a lot of the stuff if they're smart, and they will, you know, either dismiss what they're reading or it's going to get to them, one or the other. And so this thing, as far as Spinoza and free thinking, obviously, and you made the statement that you don't want people that aren't part of the free thinking crowd or people who can discern truth from fiction to buy your book. What even prompted you to write this? I mean, something obviously motivated you, and I never asked that question at the beginning, so I get to ask it now.
No, it's, you know, for me, for many years, this is not the only book out there that's critical of psychiatry and the psychiatric pharmaceutical industrial complex, but what had happened for me over the years is that the whole topic of psychiatry, as is the case with any dogma, and that's what it is, really, a dogma. It's much closer to a religion, has much more closer to being a religious and political institution. These things tend to get boring. And so even books that are pro-psychiatry, anti-psychiatry, they're kind of boring. And so for me, it was like, how could I make this topic, which I think is vitally important, interesting again? And so one of the ways that I thought that would be interesting for a lot of people who wouldn't even pick up a book on psychiatry because they just see that word in the title and it would be like, I'm not reading that. That stuff's boring and stupid. I mean, it's like, How could people who really care about science, history, care about politics, care about philosophy, what would make them like interested in, I think, a pretty important topic? And so I thought one way to do that was take a look at how Spinoza, this radically enlightened thinker who was in the 17th century, what would he make of psychiatry? So that was kind of the angle to try to give people a way of making a topic that shouldn't be boring but become dogmatized and boring, how to make it come alive again and make it, you know, intriguing for people.
There you have it. 844-769-2944. Phone lines are open once again for the next 4 minutes that we're on the air here, maybe three and a half. So if you want to get a call into Dr. Bruce Levine, now is your chance. Dr. Levine is on the editorial advisory board of the Journal of Ethical Human Psychology and Psychiatry. Do they put a mag out, any kind of a magazine?
They do. They put out a journal. It's just a professional journal, the Journal of Ethical Psychology and Psychiatry. That's a journal they'll put out.
I mean, as far as the editorial advisory board, do they agree with your assessment here that you explain in this book?
Mostly, yeah. I'm sure. I mean, people don't, you know, are in 100% agreement on every particular thing, but they're, I think most of the things I've said on this show, I'd have to, that a lot of folks would agree at, especially, and people who, you know, right at Mad in America that I talked about before. And there's certain kind of dissonant organizations. There's another dissonant organization called the International Society of Ethical Psychologists and Psychiatrists. And there's places called Mind Freedom that have been created and run by ex-psychiatric patients. And so there's a whole community of different organizations out there. You'll never hear about them in the mainstream media, who are like sort of marginalized on the outside here, sort of what we call radically enlightened here, people who are taking a look and who are pretty much, you know, and I write it, Man in America. So, those kind of folks would pretty much agree with most of what I'm saying, I'm sure.
Well, and the thing that I guess we, you know, as we're coming to a close with our show here, Dr. Levine, is the circumstances that are going on in America right now with the raid in Mar-a-Lago, with the tit for tat in the media, with the mainstream media continuing to divide America. I'm not going to ask you for professional advice, but I would, you know, like to see some sort of an overview statement on how the smart listeners are dealing with this or how they should be dealing with this.
Well, you know, one of my heroes, I wrote a lot about him in Resisting Illegitimate Authority, was George Carlin. And, you know, George Carlin, you know, famously said, you know, when it came to politicians, they don't care about you at all, at all, at all. And I think people, you know, they want to like believe it's easy for people on the red team to see all these guys on the blue team who don't care about them at all. And it's easy vice versa. But for the most part, you know, if you, you know, I think people got to really, really, you know, accept that at that level, when people, the kind of folks who are at that level that are national figures, Democrat, Republican, all those kind of folks, none of them, they care about power. They care about for themselves, you know, whether you're talking about Trump or Biden. And if you're going to, you know, you're really, from my point of view, wasting your mental energy to put much, too much time caring about them as opposed to caring about yourself, your family, and your friends.
That's great advice and good oversight on your part. And see, the thing is if you were paying attention to community and paying attention to what you're doing, because you can't help others if you can't help yourself, first off, I think most people would agree with that. But, you know, finding things to take your mind away from the fear, which is, this is why I go out in the afternoon and I work on my greenhouse and I work on the chicken coop and I work on the rabbit hutch. And I do things for me because everybody's talking food shortage. I'm not doing it out of fear. I'm doing it because, hey, you know what? I miss my gardening. I need to go out and do something and eat healthy. And I'm sure Darlene would agree with me on that thing. So aside from that, Bruce Levine, it was wonderful having you on the show. The call response obviously agrees. And so, we appreciate you. Thank you so much for the work you do.
Great talking with you, Dave.
All right, there you go. Thank you, sir. Profession Without Reason. Go ahead, get that book today. It's on Amazon if you dare to buy it there. In the meantime, one parting comment. God bless you and God bless the United States of America.
Who's standing on the mountains? Who is on the earth below? Bigger than the heavens and the lover of my soul. Creator God, He is Yahweh. Great I am, He is Yahweh. The Lord of all, He is Yahweh. Who's of Sharon, He is Yahweh. Righteous Son, He is Yahweh. The Three in One, He is Yahweh.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.